Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Once again, J.D. Vopes, thank you for your opening music. That was Mad Cow Line Dance from J.D. Vopes, a founding member of Turnbuckle Turmoil. Hello, all you Turnbuckle fans. This is Q.T. Vopes, manning the switchboard on another Friday. Sunday is off on assignment. Actually, you could call this assignment by car, because he's picking up the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, and transporting him via Edmunds Ferry to Port Orchard, Washington, where he will be in action tonight with Pacific Wrestling Federation. Two questions will immediately pop in our legions of Turnbuckle followers' minds. Number one, did Sign Guy have ready for Kevin Sullivan, the minute he sat down in the car, a cup of instant coffee for the ride, or was it fresh brewed and in a thermos? And number two, did Sign Guy pull some strings and get the Edmunds Ferry boat captain to grant bridge access to Kevin Sullivan so he could toot the foghorn? Hopefully Sign Guy will relay this information to Coach Mike Jones, who is our newly elected Turnbuckle Turmoil press release spokesperson. Today, we welcome back Darkness, who last appeared on our show, get this, January 12th, 2016. Darkness is well known in the Portland area, and blue-collar wrestling in particular, who sometimes goes by the name Darkness. There is no doubt, because he possesses Dirk Nowitzki power forward-like qualities. Darkness, welcome back to the show, or should I say Darkness?
It's Darkness. Darkness is what Facebook will let me post, but thanks for having me back on. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very good. Now, Darkness, it's surprising because before the show, I learned that you were in the state of Georgia. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what you are doing across the nation at this moment?
Basically what I've been up to after I was attacked and had my leg re-injured. I've basically just been going, just walking, you know. Once I found out I had the ability to walk again, once the doctor said it was okay, that's all I decided to do. I kind of packed up and went a little kung fu and just kind of walked the earth for a little bit. I left Portland, just kind of walked, hitchhiked across the United States, and currently I find myself in Georgia in the dirty South. So that's where I'm at right now at the moment.
Oh, okay, I see. Now, before I did some research, all the shows that we do kind of blur into one another, and I couldn't remember if you were on our show. I certainly couldn't quite remember back to January 16th. And for all our fans, when we have our first-timers on the show, we ask them the standard question, how did you get started in this crazy business? For the first time on Turnbuckle Turmoil, I'm going to ask our standard second-timers question. Can you fill our listeners in on how you got started in this crazy business?
Well, I got started originally. I don't know if it was part of the business, but when I was a kid, I went to summer camp, and we used to rent these things called videos from a video store. And they let the kids pick, and one of these kids grabbed the Royal Rumble 1988, and they put it in the VCR slot back at the summer camp, and that was my first exposure to the business. It was weird seeing all these. It was like live-action superheroes, and I was into that at that time when I was a kid as well, and it kind of just stuck. So my first exposure to the business was as a young kid. It was bonding between my mom and my sister at the time. And, you know, I'm sure my mom watched it for completely different reasons than I did, but that was something that we used to bond over. I'd skip ahead high school. A lot of my friends, close friends, we watched it again. That was the big time in the 90s, NWO, Attitude Era, all that good stuff, ECW, which was, I was a huge fan of. And then skip ahead a few more years, and a friend of mine was doing the promotional work for a California promotion called AOW. And he's like, hey, you know, do you want to try out? Do you want to see if you can still do this? Because it had always been a dream of mine. It had always been something that I had wanted to do and try. And the area that I was in, it wasn't very close to any kind of federations. It wasn't close to any companies. And it was a drive to get to a school and everything like that. So I went in and I met with the owner of AOW. And he said, all right, if you want to come up to training, you know, start on the ring crew. So I started doing ring crew, set up the ring, broke down the ring after the show. I did all that stuff and then drove about a half hour away from where I lived in the desert in the blistering sun. And he had the ring set up in his backyard. And about 115 to 20 degree weather in the summer, I started my wrestling career with training. And it's been a blur ever since.
Holy smokes. Now, at any time when you started working out with AOW, did you consider becoming a referee or a manager?
Referee could have been fun. Given my size, they tend not to pick referees of my size. I mean, I can referee if given the proper training, but they like to pick the referees a little bit smaller. So, you know, the cruiserweights flying around having a referee that's, you know, 2 feet taller than them, they kind of frown upon. But, you know, it's not something I would rule out, but I always wanted to be a wrestler.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, did you go out for wrestling in junior high or high school? Did you have a Greco-Roman or a freestyle wrestling background when you were going to school?
Not exactly. Everyone knew that I was into wrestling when I was in high school, and I wore the shirts and all that stuff before people knew exactly what, you know, all the slogans meant and everything, before it blew up really big mainstream. And I kind of got picked on a little bit by one of the Greco-Roman wrestlers. He's like, you think you can wrestle? You think it's all, you know, it's not real. It's not this. I was like, all right, you know, if you're going to be that way. He's like, come back to the wrestling room. And it was an adjoining classroom that had the hallway behind us. And we were in a computer class, and just right across the hall was where they had the practice room for the collegiate, Greco-Roman wrestling. So we went back there, and he's like, all right, let's go. I was like, okay. So he shot in on me, and I was still pretty tall in high school. So he shot in on me, and me not knowing anything about Greco-Roman, he was a perfect spot for a powerbomb. So I picked him up from the waist and I dropped him down into a powerbomb, and the whole class that was all in there just kind of was in shock. And he looked up at me, he's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm wrestling. So that was the only exposure I ever really had to Greco-Roman, but they didn't want me around after what I did to one of the other wrestlers in high school. So I just knew what I knew. Wrestling to me has always been professional wrestling. So I considered it at one point, but after my run-in with one of the Greco-Roman wrestlers in high school, I kind of put it aside and said, no, I'm just going to go for what I know.
Oh, now at that time, you were not on the wrestling team, though, were you?
No, I was just,
okay.
You know, that weird kid with the wrestling shirts and the, you know, the long hair that kind of kept to himself that nobody really paid any attention to, but, you know, kind of hit out and got challenged every now and then. Like I said, I didn't understand anything about Greco-Roman. All I knew was, you know, eye gouges, power bombs, and, you know, all that good stuff. So hey, those are frowned upon in Greco-Roman, apparently.
So was that a guy that the true member of the Greco-Roman team, was he also a football player?
Actually, yeah, I think he was on the off season, because I don't think those sports run perpendicular to each other. I think you can be both. I honestly really didn't follow the sports in high school. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. You were more like an outcast, bordering like maybe as one of the goth kids?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because in high school, the way that the school was laid out, they had these little cutouts at the end of each building where soda machines were. And it was almost comical looking back at it because you can go down, walk down the pathway to the school, you see in this cutout, there's the jocks. In this cutout, here's the preppy kids. In this cutout, here's the band kids. All the way down at the end was us, and it was a mixture of the punkers, the metalheads, and the goth kids. And we all kind of got along, and right next to us were the skaters and the surfers. So, you know, it's just so weird how cliques and everyone goes rank and file into their own spots and everyone's got their space. It's just kind of strange, but that's the way it was for me in high school. So I was at the last one on the left down at the end, and that's where I hang out with most of the people that were like-minded.
Oh, okay. Now, at that time, were you wearing a Metallica rock band shirt? Metallica.
Yeah, Metallica was one of them. I mean, everyone wore Metallica shirts. This was the late 90s, so they were huge. Misfits,
oh, okay.
Typo Negative. I was a little bit off of the mainstream. I mean, there was Slayer, Metallica, Megadeth, all that good stuff, which is great music, and then I was just a little bit slightly off, that was a little bit deeper into what people were listening to at the time. So.
Oh, all right. Okay. Now, when you were 11 years old at that day camp, and that guy had that camcorder, and he showed you those wrestling films, did it immediately pop into your mind that maybe he had some blank cassettes, and you could put on some wrestling skits or show with the camp counselor's approval, maybe some wrestling shows for yourself?
We didn't have anything like a camcorder or anything set up, but it was funny because we had like this raised stage that was just behind where they showed the movies and stuff like that. And a bunch of the people that were into the wrestling that were watching it, we all picked the wrestler that we were, and we would climb into this raised stage, and we would use it as a ring. It was actually kind of cool because, I mean, a bunch of little kids, you could fit, you know, 60 of us in that ring. And we basically had a battle royal, a Royal Rumble, and we would throw each other off of the stage, and when we fell off of the stage, we were eliminated. So we did that almost on a daily basis after we watched the 88 Royal Rumble. So that was actually pretty cool. That was fun. We'd all go through and pick our wrestler, and then we would emanate and, you know, just go ahead and put on our own shows. So that was pretty fun.
Wow. How many kids chose to be Shawn Michaels or Razor Ramon?
You know what the funny thing is? At that time, they weren't really big yet. Shawn Michaels was around. He was a rocker. It was funny because it was it was before the time of the new era or whatever they call it. So this was still old school. This was late 80s. My favorites at that time were Jake the Snake and oddly enough, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. But it was just that era right there. Demolition was still pretty big. Those were always huge picks. Of course, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, those guys were always big picks. The Hart Foundation, stuff like that. So it was right before Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels, and all them started making it big. But, yeah, we were just on the end of old school.
Now, did you have any of the girls at that camp? I imagine this was a co-ed camp. Did you have any of the girls wanting to be managers like Slick Nick Bockwinkel?
Well, there was one girl that was interested in it, and whoever picked Macho Man was assigned this girl because she was always Miss Elizabeth. That was all we had. She always wanted to be Elizabeth, and we were just like, yep, go for it. Whoever picks Macho Man, you go with them. And that was how we filed her off to whoever was going to, you know, be Macho Man for that day.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Now, were the camp counselors aware that you were having these battle royals? They weren't held in secret, were they?
Somewhat. I mean, the camp counselor that let us rent the video, he was okay with it, as long as none of us actually got hurt. So we'd every now and then have a stray counselor wander through that area and like just lose their mind because they didn't understand what we were doing. I mean, we were just kids. We were semi roughhousing, semi, you know, we knew what we were doing. You know, we wouldn't pick them up and drop them straight out of this stage. But, you know, we wait for them to grab on and, oh, I just eliminated you. Okay, I'm eliminated. So it was one of those things. I mean, we weren't sitting there pounding on each other for real. So nobody got upset at us too bad.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I'm going to imagine that in 1988, this I'm throwing this out there, you were probably 11 years old.
In 88, I was 7 or 8, depending on what month it was. But, yeah, I was right around that age.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, did you have the presence of mind or some of the kids to get the mattresses from the racks and use it as cushion below the stage to cushion the falls? Did any of the kids drag the mattresses out there?
No, actually, that never occurred to us. We just dropped down straight on the dirt, and it was grass, so yeah,
oh,
I had a
okay,
little bit of cushion,
right.
But it wasn't too bad.
All right, fantastic. Okay, do you remember the? Now, was it a YMCA camp?
Yeah, it was similar. It was similar to the YMCA.
Oh, okay.
It was called the Buccaneer Club. It was like its own thing. But yeah, it was independently owned. It was an indie fed of daycares, summer camps.
Wow. Now, do you think that any of these wrestling matches that you had at that day camp prepared you for that eventual encounter with that Greco-Roman wrestler at your high school? Could that have laid the groundwork?
It might have, actually. I mean, it's funny because when you're a little kid and you're wrestling around, you play fighting and stuff, you're always looking for your way to get back on top. So you learn whatever somebody does, you have a counter for because you don't want to ever lose. As a little kid, you just won't let it happen. So somebody, you know, shoots in on you, you got 4 moves to reverse it because you don't want to lose. So it's always funny because I just punched you in the face. Oh, I blocked it and grabbed your wrist and twisted it, you know. So we've always got different counters and everything. And it kind of stays with you for a while. So when he shot in on me and I was like, hey, he just left himself wide open for a power bomb. So, you know.
Wow, all right. All right, well, our standard second question we usually ask on the show. What's the hardest knife-edge chop you've ever received from a male or female wrestler?
The hardest knife-edge chop.
Yeah.
You see, when I went through, and they call it the baptism, when you have your first match. Unfortunately for me, it was at a Rumble. So I had an entire locker room line up to initiate. And the one that stands out the most is probably Eric Watts because the guy's hand is so huge. He went and he hit that chop, and I had to look down and make sure my nipple was still on my chest. That thing, he laid that thing in, and there was probably about 15 people before him and another 10 after him, but that's the one that probably stands out the most from when I was getting chopped. So Eric Watts, big nasty.
Oh, okay. All right. I would have thought that maybe at those AOW tryouts, they might have tried a chop or two then.
Yeah, they did. You know, the two guys that trained me, Steven Andrews and what is he going by now? Yeah. If he's listening, he's going to get mad. But, yeah, Steven Andrews and Drake Fortune at the time. So, yeah, they laid them in there. So it was pretty good, though. Yeah, I remember them. I remember them chops because those are the ones I get most frequent. So, but, yeah, they laid them in there. They wanted to make sure I knew what I was getting into.
Oh, okay. So how long did it take? So Steven Andrews and Drake Fortune, where are they now?
Steven Andrews is... they're both still with AOW. Drake Fortune is now known as Matthias Starkey. So he's kind of had an attitude change, and he's whole different person now. So I tried approaching him. I don't even think if he remembers me. I don't know if he's, you know, he's just got his nose in the air or what his problem is. But they're both still with AOW and both traveling around. Matthias has actually been up to BCW and worked Portland a few times, and he goes all over the place. So, yeah, but that's where I had my – most of my encounters were in Portland and AOW in California with them.
Oh, all right. Now, I remember when I first moved back to the Northwest in 2006 from the Gulf Coast when I got out of the military, I caught a few shows in Portland, one of those first couple shows, especially when we were starting up Turnbuckle Turmoil, and our second interview ever was live from a wrestling match, and the Reno Scum, the tag team Reno Scum, were in action that night. Do you know if Steve Andrews and Drake Fortune have worked with the Reno Scum, who have now gone on to, I believe, the Ring of Honor?
You know what? They have worked with a lot of people. They have worked the Young Bucks and stuff like that. I want to say that I believe that they have crossed paths with Reno Scum, but I can't say for sure. I honestly don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Darkness, are there any truth to the rumors out of Shelton, Washington, that you are in the front running to be the Grand Marshal in the upcoming 7th Annual Paddy's Cruise that will be held this summer in St. John's, in the St. John's area of Portland? And if you are elected Grand Marshal, you will be sitting in a converted 1977 Ford Pinto station wagon with a 378 V8 Hemi nitrous burning fuel injected Hurst engine.
This is the first time actually hearing about this one. I wrestled at the cruise in last year. I think it's recently coming up again, but yeah. The following night after my match at the cruise-in is when I broke my leg. So as far as a Grand Marshal, I have no idea. I haven't been contacted about anything, but I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. We might have to change the car a little bit, but yeah, I haven't heard anything of it as of yet.
Oh, well, you know, even a 1977 Ford Pinto station wagon, if it's outfitted with the right engine and it has the right paint job, it's considered cool.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, that Paddy's home plate, they all always put on those very good cruises in the summer. Yes. And the wrestling matches. Very nice.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun last year.
Although the temperature can get hot.
Yeah. You know, it was funny. As last year, we had the cruising, and everyone was complaining about the heat, and I just looked and laughed. I was like, this is nothing. I was trained in worse than this. This is nothing. You guys have no idea. It was funny because you get knocked down onto that mat, and it was almost a gimmick match in itself because that mat was so hot, you would jump right back up off of there. It was almost like a inferno match or something like that. It was burning up, but it still wasn't anything compared to what I was trained in.
Well, now you're currently right now in the Georgia area, and I imagine that's very hot and dry at the moment.
Yeah, it's hot, but it's humid. It's what's adding to it right now. We're scheduled for a thunderstorm here in the next couple of days, but it's about 85 degrees. It gets up to 90 midday. So, yeah, it's with the humidity, it's hitting right around the type of environment that I was raised in. So,
right, about the only place worse than southern Georgia is probably New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, right now I couldn't even. When you walk outside and you're soaking wet because it's like you're walking through a cloud, that's not for me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Darkness, what did you think of the Washington State Senate passing Lucha Vote 1710? And in your opinion, will this mean more wrestlers coming into blue-collar wrestling and maybe increased attendance?
Political on me. Give me a rundown real quick what that one was. I'm not sure.
Well, Lucha Bill 1710 was sponsored recently in the state legislature. It did pass, and this gives a lot more freedom and a lot more leeway for wrestling in Washington State. All the regulations have been somewhat relaxed, and the restrictions. You know how quite some time ago that most often you had to have a special license just to hold the event. And then you'd have to pay off the ambulance that had to be there. And a lot of times they were held on Indian reservations.
Yeah, I remember people complaining about this. It would come down from Washington. Yeah, they'd have their special license and everything like that. I don't think I've ever ventured into Washington to wrestle. So, but yeah, I mean, if you open the gates for more talent to come through, that's better matches, different matches. You know, I'm all for it. But, you know, that means I can go over there without any issue, too. So that works for me in my favor, too.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Darkness, both Sign Guy and myself have seen injuries throughout the Northwest, everything from head contusions, concussions, broken fingers, slipped disc, rolled ankles. If you stay with the sport long enough, you're going to get injured. You suffered an injury not unlike the one Sid Justice suffered that essentially shut down 95% of his career, but he did it jumping from a turnbuckle. Can you tell our Turnbuckle listeners what injury has sidelined you for more than 6 months, and who were you in a match with when it occurred? A lot of our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners don't know this. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, I was in a match with my tag team partner at the time in Dark Asylum, Big Vicious. We were the tag team champions, the Pacific Northwest NWA tag team champions. And we were up against what they were calling themselves at the time, the West Side Connection, which is Buddy Highway and Bad Blood. And basically what happened was I was outside the ring fighting with Buddy Highway, and Big Vicious was out there as well. And then all of a sudden, Buddy Highway went one way, and Big Vicious went another way. And the next thing I know, I see Bad Blood jumping from the ring over the top rope and landing on top of me. I went to catch him, and my leg buckled underneath me. It felt like my knee had popped, my ankle. And I had actually broken my leg and then landed on top of my ankle and crushed my ankle along with breaking my leg. And I tried to get up to finish the match because that's what you're supposed to do. And I found I couldn't stand. I couldn't walk. And I was pretty much laid out down ringside. They continued fighting in the ring. The match was finished. And I was helped to the back. Luckily, my boot took some of the blow and some of the break, so I didn't break my my, I don't know if it's a femur, tibia, fibula, the bigger bone. And I got taken away in an ambulance. So, yeah, I had a crushed ankle and a broken leg from, I guess it was a suicide dive or a plancha or, just a dive over the top rope that landed solely on me, and my own body weight landing on my ankle crushed it.
Well, that's quite a bit of weight coming at you with quite a bit of force. Kind of like Earl Campbell used to do.
Yeah, it was, Bad Blood's up there, and he's right around my size, and then my size on top of it, landing on the ankle and the leg. So, yeah, it was a lot of weight coming down on it.
Now, did you have a plate put in next to your ankle with some screws?
Yeah, they put in a piece of metal, and then they had to put my ankle back together. So they drilled through the ankle with a piece, and they put a piece of wire through there. And at the end of the wire, they put a metal button, and then they pulled it all back together, and they cinched it down. And I was unable to walk for, I'd say, 4 or 5 months.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, yeah, I was laid up for a while. I was in a full cast and everything.
Now, a lot of those, a lot of your blue-collar wrestlers tend to get carted off at a nearby hospital. Can you tell us what hospital they took you to?
What was the name of it? Honestly, I don't remember. There's Providence around in that area. It wasn't Providence. There's at Vannis, and it wasn't at Vannis. San Emmanuel, maybe? I think it was something like that, but it was the closest one to the arena right there. So
I think it might have been the one they took Paul Moonshine to.
Yeah, he's a frequent flyer over there. They got a punch card for him. He's over there so much.
Can you imagine the pain? And what you went through was probably around 7%, or maybe closer to 10% of what Evel Knievel went through. Can you imagine the amount of metal Evel Knievel has in his body, or did?
Oh, my God, I can't even. I mean, it's funny because everyone asks, did it hurt? Did it? You know what? It didn't. It just felt like when you crack your knuckle, and then there was soreness. But it wasn't a shooting pain. It wasn't a stabbing pain. So, you know, with someone like Evel Knievel, who's broken pretty much every bone in his body and had buttoned all back up together again, is more metal than man. You know, I can see how he can get through it, but there's got to come to a point where you're just, the aftermath is too much to take. I mean, being laid up, being unable to walk, you know, and having all those problems afterward was what was really bad for me. Like, in the moment, I was more upset about not being able to finish the match and the repercussions it was going to have on my life more than the pain. So, you know, at that moment, it wasn't so bad. It's the aftermath that really does the number on you. I mean, it strains relationships. It, you know, it keeps you from being able to go about your day-to-day life. And that's actually the most devastating part of it. I mean, the pain's one thing, but, you know, it subsides after a while. But it's the ripple effect that something like that causes in your life. So someone like Evel Knievel having that happen every other week, I can't even imagine.
Well, you know, Evel Knievel, he did make a lot of successful jumps, you know, like on Wild World of Sports where nothing would go wrong and he wouldn't get injured. But it only takes like one crash, like when he tried to jump the fountains at Caesar Palace, where pretty much it was touch and go with his life. And then he turns around and even after Caesar's Palace goes, I'm going to jump the Snake River Canyon.
You find a passion for something like that, there's nothing going to stop you unless you're incapacitated or you're no longer with us.
Yes. Okay. All right. And speaking of Evel Knievel, we here at Turnbuckle Turmoil usually assign homework assignments. I'd like you to, when you get the time, to go on YouTube and look up Evel Knievel jumps at the Cow Palace and takes on the Hell's Angels.
Okay, I can do that. That sounds
because,
interesting.
Because during a Cow Palace jump, he was warming up, and a Hell's Angel member, I guess, was offended at what Evel said about the Hell's Angels before this event, and he threw a wrench at Evel, and I'm going to let you watch the video and see what pain the Hell's Angels inflicted upon themselves with a pro-evil crowd. Yes.
Oh, this sounds interesting. I definitely will be looking it up. It sounds interesting enough for me to pursue.
Yes, it is. It is interesting. You'll have a good time. We assign homework assignments. Our sign guy has given me that job as a staff member, so I've assigned a lot of assignments to wrestlers. Yes, so that is yours. Okay. All right. Well, can you tell us how you are you now going about rehabilitating your ankle now that you've got the cast off, besides walking?
I got the cast off. I was walking with a cane, and they had the Darkness Appreciation Night at BCW, which was awesome, you know. And I stayed on and did commentary for, you know, weeks after that. Maybe it was a couple months. And then that's when I was attacked again. And I actually had my cane used against me, and it was used on my leg. My former tag team partner and friend, Big Vicious, decided that he wanted to realign himself with Bad Blood and Buddy Highway and Wonderful Zach Winters and reform the faction in BCW. So I was basically the last remains of his past, and he decided to, you know, get rid of me. So since that happened, I went back in, and I had the screws tightened down. They went back in and did a bunch of work on it so I could walk again. And the rehab for that is pretty much finished. I'm walking on my own. I'm running on my own. Now my biggest concern is getting myself in shape and condition to come back. So rehab for the leg is done. Now it's just getting myself into a place where I can return safely and basically take care of business.
Yes, I believe your Darkness tribute was held on Halloween, October 31st of last year. Am I correct?
Yeah, it was that weekend. I don't think it directly fell on Halloween, but, you know, what a perfect time, you know. They had a costume battle royal. They had all kinds of specialty matches, and it was all in my honor. That was pretty cool, you know. I was kind of a jerk as far as being a wrestler goes. I was, you know, I just went out there and hurt people, and, you know, the fans got behind me, and the fans and the company. You know, I appreciate everything that they did for me, and, you know, something like that comes up in your life and you don't know how to deal with it. And it's good to know that there's decent people that'll help you out and get you through that situation as best as they can. So that was cool to see. And I kind of eased up on the evil attitude as far as, you know, dealing with the fans and everything. When the war paint goes on and I go out, there's darkness, I'm still full throttle. But I found that it was easier to be a little bit kinder to the fans after that night. So it was an eye-opener for me.
Oh, well, now that kind of segues into the next question. Will a new lineup of the Dark Asylum be formed when you come back? And if so, would Kane Jaden be in the running to be a member of the newly reformed Dark Asylum? And if you don't want to use such a dark approach, would it be the Twilight Asylum?
Well, Twilight, unfortunately, these days has a whole other meaning. And, you know, sparkly vampires aside, I don't think I'll be using Twilight. But it's funny because, you know, a lot of people look at the current locker room in BCW, and, you know, it's almost divided, old school, new school. You know, I was always in between. If someone's got talent, someone's got talent. You know, Kane Jaden, whenever I've seen him wrestle, whenever I've wrestled him, I've seen talent. You know, some people don't like that style. Some people, you know, are jealous of that style. You know, some of the vets and stuff don't, you know, they don't like seeing that kind of stuff. I don't know if it's because they can't do it themselves or it's not how they were doing it when they were coming up. But Kane Jaden, I got nothing but respect for. I mean, the stuff that kid does in the ring, it amazes me. And I'm not one of those people that, you know, if something like that happens in the ring that I get jealous because I can't do it. I see something like that, I'm like, that's an asset. That's something that I can use. So if there's a rebuilt Dark Asylum, if it encompasses more people, if Kane Jaden would be a part of it, yeah, I'd consider it definitely. I mean, they got the faction running wild over there. So as many people as we can get together at when the time is right to face and fight the faction, I'm all for it.
Would you say this is fairly reasonable to say Kane Jaden is the Sabu of BCW?
Yeah, if you were going to say, you know, who's the Sabu, Kane Jaden would be up there. I mean, some of the things I've seen him do, you know, in regular matches is insane. But then they start putting him in matches like, you know, tables, ladders, and chairs, ladder matches with the belts hanging from the ceiling. They put him in elimination, you know, last man standing. You give that kid a hardware store, and he's going to run wild with it, and he's going to go nuts. And you're going to see some things that you've never seen before. I was on commentary, and he was having a match. They had them going through so many matches, so many different types of matches. I don't remember what it was, but he was pulling some stuff off that I stood up at the announce booth and just started clapping for him. I gave him a standing ovation. The whole group of them, it was a triple threat match. I want to say it was Kane Jaden and Aries Toretto, and then they were against, I can't even remember right now. It all blends together after a while. But we put Aries Toretto and Kane Jaden in a match, either together or against each other, you're going to see things that you've never seen before.
Well, I've seen them do those suicide dives through the ropes, and they'll reach the front tables easily. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know what? And not to be too dark or evil right now, it's fun to face him because he is so small. I can pick him up and throw him across that ring without any problem, and it's fun. I actually like fighting with him because no matter how much I do to him, he always gets back up and comes back at me for more.
Yes, that's the problem. You throw him across the ring, but he bounces up and rushes back at you, yes.
Yeah, but that's the kind of stuff I love.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, Darkness, when you were injured, that blue collar, do you remember anyone yelling out, "Hot nurse needed"?
Hot nurse needed.
Yes.
No, I don't. I was mostly just trying to – the original injury, the second injury, it's funny. You get in that ring and you kind of get deafened by what's going on around you. You kind of tune it out. So I don't remember a hot nurse at all, but I'm sure somebody could have yelled it out.
Well, I ask you this because recently – Sign Guy was thrown out of the ring in Bremerton, Washington at La Problemitas, and you could hear a voice above the roar of the crowd saying, "He needs a hot nurse." And that was probably because in Sign Guy's Sign of the Times, which he has been doing for several years now, he features Casey Carlisle in many pictures, and in one of the pictures, Casey Carlisle is dressed as a hot nurse. So I think someone at La Problemitas has picked up on this because he's a huge fan of the Sign of the Times, and he yelled out "Hot nurse needed." And I think Sign Guy acknowledged this when he almost landed on the ring bell.
You know, it amazes me how many more people follow Sign Guy than the wrestlers in the ring half the time. He's got his own group of followers. It's amazing to see. And they come out. They come out in force. And they let themselves know that they're there. And I think Sign Guy loves it.
Well, he's been followed on Twitter, but not literally, because that'd be kind of stalking.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, now, Darkness, just like heavyweight boxers that come back after they have lost their title or maybe from an injury, they have a tune-up match before their next shot at the championship. Could you see yourself in a tune-up match with Tony Stetson, who has been doing very well recently in recent weeks in blue collar, or maybe perhaps a tune-up tag team match with Sunny Days as your partner?
You know, the funny thing about Sunny Days is that everyone tells me, and it's known, is she's got her own dark side, the dark days that she's gone by. And you know what? If the Dark Asylum comes back, if there's a group of us, like-minded individuals that want to take the faction down, stuff like that, that's something I would definitely look into. Would I mind tag teaming with her? No, I think it would be awesome. She's got a different style than me, but it's one that I think would mesh well. She's a little bit quicker. I mean, she's a lot quicker than me, and she's got more, speed, and she's in and out of there with punches and attacks. And I'm a little bit slower and more methodical, and I'll wear them down. I think that would actually be a good team if it ever came to pass. And as far as Tony Stetson, you know, glad to hear he's back. When I won the tag team champions down there at BCW with Big Vicious, it was against Tony Stetson and Tex Thompson. And after that match, Tony Stetson was gone for a long time. So knowing that he's back now, I mean, there might be some unfinished business there. But, you know, I never had a beef with him, and I even said that to him. You know, his cancer warrior thing. I mean, that's good work that he's doing. But he's a good wrestler. And as far as a tune-up match would go, it would definitely put me to the test to see if I was ready to come back or not.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if Sunny Days did join, like, the Dark Asylum, maybe along with Kane Jaden, who would be your manager, Sarge?
I don't know if Sarge would be the one. Sarge has had experience with Butcher, so he has that ability to kind of deal with the crazy deranged. I don't know who I would pick as far as a manager would go. You know, out of everybody that's been through there, he would probably be the most, you know, experienced with that type of a faction, I would think, with all of his years with Butcher. But I might go outside of BCW to find a manager if I was going to have one. You know, there's been a lot of people through those doors through the years, and you know, there might just be enough people that are waiting to come back that an entire surprise faction could come back with me. People that have come and gone through the years that, you know, just waiting for the right moment to come back.
All right. Okay. Now, will you be carrying a skull on a pillow to the ring when you appear next at BCW? Because I got to tell you, that skull kind of scares longtime fan, elderly BCW fan, Orlin. Orlin.
Yeah, the skull is still around. The skull is still with me. As I go through my travels, it's funny because, you know, when I had my injury, it kind of knocked things out of proportion. It kind of screwed things up a little bit. You know, when you're the victim, the skull doesn't want to really talk to you anymore. The skull doesn't want to have anything to do with you. So I became the victim because I used to be I'd victimize people. I'd just go out there and hurt them because that's what I was meant to do. And the skull loved it. The skull gave me advice, told me what to do, how to do it. But when I became the victim, when I had that injury, the voice stopped. And Skull's still around. I still have him. And I've gotten whispers, but nothing concrete. There's no advice coming. No. So I've kind of been on my own. You know, Big Vicious left and went to join the faction. The voice from Skull, gone. I've got nothing. So it's one of those things, you know, I'm just walking across the United States, walking, just trying to clear my head, trying to get things back into focus and, you know, figure things out and just try and grab control over this power again. And as soon as I get more than a whisper that I know that I'm doing the right thing, then that's going to add a lot into letting me know that it's time to come back.
All right, I'm going to mark down in our Turnbuckle Turmoil logbook the Skull Whispers. Okay, all right. Oh, it looks like we've got a caller from the 503 area code. Caller from the 503, you're on Turnbuckle Turmoil with Darkness.
I can only sit here and hear this crap for so long. Darkness, you sit here and talk about coming back, but you know what? I left you lying in that ring like the garbage you are. Your skull doesn't whisper to you because it doesn't like you. I don't speak to you because I don't like you. And when the faction sees your face again, we will smear it all over the bottom of the concrete and bury you where nobody will see you again.
Let me tell you something, Vicious. I was the only one that came to you when you were rotten in that asylum. I was the only one that came and checked you out every weekend and brought you down to that arena. You know, we won belts together, whatever. I thought we had a friendship. We had each other's backs in this business. You know, you just basically reaffirmed there are no friends in this business. And let me tell you something. If my face ever shows up back down there again, which it will when the time is right, you're not going to see it coming. You're not going to know it's coming. And I'm going to position myself, because all I'm doing right now is sitting back planning, sitting back scheming, putting things together, not only against you, but the faction as well. And when the time is right and when the plan comes together, it's the end of it for you. You know, I tried. I tried multiple times. You know, old dog, new tricks. That's all you are. You're an old dog now. We used to make fun of Tex Thompson for being an old dog. But you're not learning anything new. Your default is to go running back to the faction. You know what? I don't have time for people like you. If that's the way you want to try and treat me, you want to put me out again, you know what that tells me? That you're scared. I pose a threat to you.
No, wait. You talk about being there, but you weren't there while I was defending those tag team titles, trying to hold them for Dark Asylum. No, you were gone. You were sitting in the back. All you would do is come to the ring after I was beat. You come out and you try to stop me from doing what I had to do to make sure. So you talk about old tricks. No, you went soft. You went soft like the little wussy that you are. And you know what? I went back to the faction because they know how to get things done. It's not that I went there because I was scared or that I needed something. Yeah, I did need something. I needed somebody to remind me that I am Big Vicious and I take what I want.
All right. You know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And you got big right in your name. So when you fall, you're not going to get back up. Because I am not going to stand by and let you get away with what you did. It might take me a while to bounce back. I'll give you that. You know what? You want to hit a guy who can barely walk with a cane? You know what kind of hardware is in this leg. You know now that what you did, I was still open for an attack. You don't know what I'm up to now. You don't know what I look like now. You don't know anything. And by the time I get back to BCW, once I get my head straight, mind, body, and soul, everything's back together, because I'm not coming back until it is. You are my target. And you'll know exactly, you know what, I should actually thank you. I should thank you, because if you hadn't have given me this time to reflect and to sit around and scheme and plan my comeback, I would have still been what I was. Unfocused, unreliable in the ring. Yeah, I'll give that to you. You know, it was chaos. Our tag team was pure and utter chaos. All we did is go out there and hurt people. But you know what? A little bit of focus, determination, and a thirst for vengeance can go a long way.
Well, you can keep yapping, but I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm going to send a message to you, and I'm going to send that through Sign Guy. The next time I see him anywhere in the BCW locker room, ringside, or even in that ring, I will show you exactly what I'll do to you when I see you next through him.
That's fine. You want to attack a referee? That's fine. You know, do what you need to do. I can't be held accountable for what you do to anybody else. But I want you to know this. The second you become too complacent, that's when I'm coming for you. Don't ever let your guard down, because the second you do, I will be right there. And you know it. You know exactly what I'm capable of.
We'll see. We'll see. Empty threats. That's all they are. Empty threats.
Empty threats until they're fulfilled. And then it's prophecy.
Okay, well, Big V, I think the dark wrestler known as Darkness might be getting some whispers of advice from that skull. And from what this recent conversation just now that just happened, I think the skull's ears have perked up a little bit. Yes.
You know what? I don't need skull for this. I, you know, right now, it's just the rage to call in and just keep this going like he has. Like I said, he's not going to know it's coming when it does. And like I said, I actually need to thank him, because when I was out with the first injury and I was sitting there doing commentary, I became complacent. I wasn't waiting to come back or anything. I wasn't expecting to come back. I wasn't planning on it. But now there's unfinished business. Now there's things that need to be handled. You know, the faction, they want to start up a whole new war in BCW. You know, they're going to get soldiers out of places that they've never thought of to come back and fight against them. The faction goes in waves there. There's faction, then they're broke up. There's faction, then they break up. They're becoming complacent, and they start depending on each other, and that's when they're their weakest.
Wow, well, all right. I think you better put that plans on being Grand Marshal at Patty's next cruise and walk a couple extra miles tonight in your comeback that has just added fuel to the fire with this conversation with Big B. Forget about that Grand Marshal and the Ford Pinto station wagon.
Yeah. Yes. No. The way I'm feeling right now, I'll pick the car up and throw it across the street. Feel that way, but, you know, reality is a whole other story.
All right. Okay. Well, Darkness, we only have a couple minutes left, and this is where we usually have our guests plug and promote anything they want to, their favorite Grand Marshal car that they have seen, their favorite entree at Patty's home plate, you know, their favorite Donald Trump joke, anything you want. The floor is yours.
Well, as far as anything I got going on, like I said, it's rebuild time for me. You can always find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/darkness138. And that's basically how you get a hold of me on there. I got on Twitter. It's darkness, it's just darkness1138 at Twitter. And that's how you can get a hold of me. You know, any wrestlers out there that think or that are tired of the faction, or they're tired of, you know, all that stuff, you're a little bit dark, you're a little bit evil, but you can still get the job done, let me know. I got open applications. We need to get back in there and get them out of there. So when the time is right, I'll have an army amassed, and we'll go in there and we'll start putting things right again.
All right. Well, Darkness, it's been a pleasure. We hope to have you on maybe sometime later on this year, maybe around Halloween time. In the meantime, rehabilitate that leg and ankle. And good luck in your Evel Knievel at the Cow Palace takes on the Hell's Angels video. I think you'll find that very rewarding.
Definitely. I will look into it. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you.